begins with infrastructure, so I will hand it over to Eric / Sharon.
We're just going to launch. Yeah, we're just going to launch right into the presentations from the department.
Yep. And before we do, before I forget, so we mentioned last week at the budget committee meeting when we handed out the binders that tomorrow night is COCC's 50th anniversary celebration that we discovered after everything had been booked. So, oh, I can use this handy dandy pointer. This is where we are. They think the parking lot right next door at the bookstore may fill up, but they told us this event parking back here, which is right behind the OSU building, he thought that should be fine for us to park. We shouldn't have a problem. So, but just in case, you might want to plan a little additional time for parking tomorrow. I think they're expecting like 1,000 people. And they have tours of this building. Most of it's on the first floor, but this is the health career building, so there's going to be something in the dental lab. There's apparently dogs. There's going to be a service dog demonstration. So should be interesting. And there is, they do have a massage therapist, apparently. So if you want to get here early for your pre-budget massage. So I just didn't want to forget that. So
definitely.
Yeah, if only they were going to be here at like 10
Don't
o'clock at night.
Dogs that are low anxiety dogs.
Yeah. So with that, Chris, if you want to pull up the presentations, and when Chris is doing that, we'll go through the numbers for the airport fund. We just passed around a revision to the airport budget that's in the book, and the changes are noted in red. So the airport fund, all of our capital projects are grant funded. So the change in the intergovernmental revenues and the construction and infrastructure in red, that is related to the helipad heliport project. Just a couple of weeks ago, after the budget and the document had been put together, FAA notified us that they are willing to commit an extra $3.7 million to the helipad project. The original budget had about $3.5 in there, and now we're up at about $7.3 million for that project. So we wanted to go ahead and update our proposed budget to reflect accepting the full FAA funding for that project. The additional costs do come with about a $400,000 additional match. We are going to pursue Connect Oregon or other state matches for that grant, which has been programmed into the budget. But if we're not successful at getting Connect Oregon for kind of this second phase of the project, then we will be needing city resources for that match, for that extra $400,000, it's roughly $400,000. So whether that's, they don't have enough in the airport fund to pay for that whole $400,000. Technically they do, but it would take them down to like $20,000 in reserve. So we will be back to council with updates probably, when would we know? Like fall of?
Probably July or August.
Oh, of this year? On the Connect Oregon?
No, not on the Connect Oregon. That wouldn't be known until the fall of 2016.
Okay, so fall of 2016, so kind of a year and a half from now, we'll have an idea if we are successful with Connect Oregon, and if not, we'll probably be back to council with a recommendation of maybe some general fund, some airport funds for that match. But that is the revisions that we have in front of you. Other airport revenues, the charges for services, that's hangar and lease revenues. The general fund loan from the general fund, that's just an overnight loan since their capital projects are FAA funded on a reimbursement basis. We don't get reimbursed from the FAA until we've already spent the money. So for the airport and some of our other grant reimbursement programs, we usually have year-end loans in front of council at the last meeting in June for just it's literally an overnight loan, so we have positive cash on June 30th at the end of our fiscal year. On the expenditure side, they are asking for a half of a new FTE for a half-time facility maintenance technician. They've got enough improvements and kind of maintenance needs out at the airport that Gary's been asking for this halftime person for quite a few years, and we're at the point now where it's definitely feasible and time. We felt it was time for him to request that position. And their materials and services. Most of their materials and services, it's smaller stuff that makes up that $117,000. They've got some snow removal, electricity, and then outside legal. And the rest are just their annual operating expenses. And they have, consistent with the other funds we discussed last night at the back of the airport tab, they do have some performance measures. The only item in their five-year vehicle and equipment plan is a new AWOS station, the Automated Weather Observation Station. And then you can see their five-year capital improvement schedule, which we didn't pass out an updated one of those, but when it goes to council for adoption in June, that'll be updated for the increased helipad project, which will take the biennium. And then their next big project starts in fiscal year 17-18, which is an extension of the runway. And one thing I failed to mention last night, at the very back of your binder, the other blue tabs at the very back, we have detailed project information for all of the CIP projects. So there's separate tabs for each program, water, water reclamation, stormwater, et cetera. And there's a one-page project summary, as well as a map that shows the physical location within the city where those projects are located. So I forgot to mention that last night when we went through all the infrastructure. So that's kind of a high-level overview on the airport budget. Any questions?
How much have we spent on legal? So outside legal.
We've spent our year-end projection this year. I need a ruler. Our year-end estimate this year is $90,000, and then we have another $110,000 in the biennium. Wow. I ask and I receive. Thank you. So, and you can see that on the line at the first page of the line item detail, the fourth line from the bottom. You see it?
Yeah.
So we spent $36,000 last fiscal year in 13-14. Year-end estimate for this year is 90, and then we have another 85 in 15-16 and 25 in
16-17. And then in-house is under this, is that the
citywide? Is the transfer to city attorney on the back page? It said citywide and department overhead, you'll see a transfer city attorney house.
Oh, I see.
It's
we always seem to be talking a lot about litigation here.
And you can see the increase. So this year they're going to transfer about $30,000 to the city attorney's office. Next year it's about $50,000 per year for the biennium. So that reflects the increase in Mary and Gary's time spent on that. Anything else? Casey?
Is the city under any obligation to have an airport? I mean, does every city everywhere have like a core? Okay, so no. And then two, to what extent do user fees of any type, or what income do we get out of the users that affects the budget outside?
So it is an enterprise fund. So right now the airport has been self-supporting for the last couple of years. There was a period of time where the general fund consistently subsidized the airport. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple of things that have changed. One being that the lease rates all came into market and over time have gotten to the point where, you know, there's just more stable revenue. The rates are, you know, again at market. And some other things, I think the efficiency of how the airport's being running, you'll see that in the performance measures as well. So right now it's self-sustaining.
Okay. All right.
And in terms of the economic benefit to the community, Gary, how much is estimated that
the
it
wages
brings?
Coming off of now are around $12 million a year.
Just in the wages alone.
So should we move on to the presentation?
Yeah.
Can I ask just one? So the matching funds from FAA, is that a fixed percentage of whatever amount we get from it?
Yeah, so the FAA pays for, are they 90% now? So FAA pays for 90% of the project cost, so then we're on the hook for 10.
Okay.
But we've been pretty successful in the past at getting other grants to pay for that match.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, if you want to just come next to Peter, that'd be great.
I'll move over closer to Eric, if that helps.
So good evening, my name is Carolyn Egan, and as of Monday morning, I'm the city's economic development director. So they've rewarded me with an office move and 3 nights of budget committee. and you all know Gary Judd, he's the airport manager. So we're going to walk you through what's going on at the airport. Your counselors all know you are all invited next Monday. You are coming out to do a tour of the airport to meet the representative of the Oregon Department of Aviation. And we are thrilled to get to show you for real what some of these slides really look like out at the airport. So I'm going to do my best to give the overview here, and then Gary is going to answer all the hard questions. So we touched on this a little bit, but one of the things I really wanted to draw your attention to is the blue part of all of these bars, and that's the grant funding. So primarily FAA, but also Connect Oregon funding, and you can see in years that we don't receive grant funding, we basically have revenues to operate the airport. Our ground leases, our hangar leases, our tie downs, we have some other small sources of funding, but generally, we bring in enough to run the airport. We don't bring in enough money to make investments in the airport. We're lucky that the FAA smiles very kindly on us, and they make significant strides to do whatever they can to get money to the Bend Airport so that we can do what we need. And so this bar was created prior to you receiving the updated proposal from Sharon and James, but you can see that if we didn't make that change that you're being asked to make tonight, we wouldn't have any funding to make investments in the airport at the second part of this biennium. And the investment right now is the helicopter operations area, and that's a significant part of what goes on at the airport. It's a significant investment to be able to accommodate existing demand for helicopter operations. One of the sort of gems out of the airport is the helicopter training. Now we also have fixed wing training. ProAir and Epic both provide fixed wing, but the helicopter operations is the one where, as a city business advocate, I would get calls. My son's been up there for helicopter training. We're moving to Bend. I'm moving my business. I'm moving my family. We're all coming up to Bend. So for a lot of businesses and a lot of residents, the airport and the services at the airport really become a gateway for them to decide to move to Bend versus another area. So when we look at performance measures, and you saw this yesterday, you'll continue to see this, is we looked at two airports, the one in Troutdale and the one in Hillsborough, and you can see that the takeoffs and landings, so this is both fixed wing and rotor wing, are getting up there. By the end of this biennium, we'll probably be over 150,000. Compared to Troutdale, we're far exceeding them, and compared to Hillsborough, we're catching up to them. What's interesting about both those airports is they have towers. And our airport does not have a tower. We actually have airports now that have fewer takeoffs and landings that have towers. And so you'll probably see us in the next couple years, probably the next biennium, coming to you not just for approval of runway expansion, but potentially also additional construction to really allow us to see these both jobs and activity at the airport, and even the rights and the total square footage that we're able to lease should go up. Right now, we have about 2 million leasable square footage out of the airport. When we complete the helicopter operations area, we'll have an additional 200,000. So completion of that area does would be significant in terms of total square footage. Those operations, so when you look at it like this, it's like, okay, well, you know, we're kind of in the middle. What does that mean? What we tried to do was we normalized this based on the number of based aircraft that we have at the Bend Airport. And what happens then is you can see that Troutdale really has a lot more activity. People just visiting Troutdale, they come in, they're not parking their plane and driving home that night. What happens at the Bend Airport is we have a lot of people who, businesses and individuals who park their planes there. I mean, that's a reason that they can do business in Bend. It's also a reason that doctors at St. Charles can provide service way out into Eastern Oregon, is that they can use the services at the airport. It's also related to because we have that a lot of fixed wing and rotor wing training, all of those aircraft are based at the airport. So as we see the increased investment, we should really see this change and the advantage that we have at Bend that other areas don't have. And then finally, Councilor Knight asked about the economic impact. And there's loads of different ways that you can make anything look good with economic impact. So what we tried to stick to today was really just data that is absolutely defensible. You can go back and you can find reports that will show this is exactly what happened. So what we did was we went to the Oregon Employment Department. We asked them to use their geocoded data to tell us how many jobs we had at the airport. And back in 2008, you can see that we had almost 800 jobs out at the airport. That's probably about the time that you saw reports, 1,500 jobs at the Bend Airport, 1,000 jobs at the Bend Airport. Because what this data is just reporting is the people who are employees. And there are lots of people who have a job at the airport who aren't necessarily an employee. So this is a pretty accurate representation of the people who were employees. And you can see the most recent data that we have is about 268. For 2013, and then we expect employment out there to grow. What's interesting to me is really how this tracks with the average wage that we have in Deschutes County. So back in 2009, the wages at the airport were absolutely right on target for the average wage in Deschutes County. So that's a lot of money. I mean, $15,000 a year is terrific in the Bend metro area. It unfortunately crept down a little bit, but I think with what's planned for the growth at EPIC and what could potentially come online as we build out the helicopter operations, we should see a future of wages really going up at the airport. And that's where you start to get the economic impact, is you start to see where those wages go beyond just what happens at the airport, the sales at the airport, the fuel sales at the airport, all really contribute to a good economic outlook for the investment that the city's made for.
Thank you.
So next fund is downtown parking. So that's your very next tab. The main revenues in the downtown parking fund. So this, the downtown parking fund accounts for not only operation of the Centennial parking structure, but also the downtown street parking and surface parking. So fine and permit revenues, you can see that's a little over 600,000 per year. So that is, again, fine citations and daily, monthly, annual parking permits for the parking structure as well as all other downtown parking. And then the rent revenues, we have the following tenants in the first floor of the parking garage. We've got the post office, FedEx, High Desert Framing, those three tenants, so that generates about $200,000 per year in revenue. On the expenditure side, just about $35,000 in personnel. And on the materials and services, there's the largest part of that is the contract with Diamond Parking for parking enforcement. So that's the largest part of the materials and services. And then there's in 15-16, there's also $77,000 for a parking study. That is the same parking study Nick talked about last night in transportation construction. There's about $100,000 of that study funded out of the transportation construction fund and about $77,000 in the downtown parking. And the $27,500 for construction, that's skateboard deterrence in the parking structure. Apparently it's a fun place to ride your skateboard. And it causes a lot of damage, and there's quite a bit of repair and maintenance. So they are trying to put some deterrence in to prevent that. So really high level, we don't have a presentation on parking, so any
One thing that I would just note here is that, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric about, well, the parking ticket that I get, you know, goes to pay for. That's not true. The revenue that comes from parking citations stays in this fund. It does, none of it goes out of this fund to fund other services. So you look at the fines and permit revenue. About half of that is the enforcement side. The other half are the monthly fees that folks are paying. The whole idea with the parking enforcement program is that we are moving folks. We don't want to issue citations. We want them to be permit holders and pay a monthly fee to park downtown. And that the money that's being collected is really just gets turned around to pay for the enforcement. And the reason why we do that is because we want the turnover downtown for customers. So that's just a real high level of, for those of you that are new to the Budget Committee, of how this works. Again, self-funded program, and money is staying, that revenue that's generated here stays here and pays for the program.
Eric, one of the things I had mentioned a little earlier was the idea of a lot of downtown employees parking and moving to evade and basically taking up those sort of core downtown spots. Has there been any further thought about kind of giving some permits for employees, like a window hanger like the city employees get?
Yeah, so we do a $15 a month, so low for folks that are service wage downtown, so we offer discounted parking. We have a couple of locations, one on the top of the parking garage. We also have a lot that we lease from the City of Power in the Elks Lodge as well. So, yeah, we put some programs in place a few years ago to address that issue, to try to encourage folks not to park in front of the businesses.
There's been a number of discussions about a downtown parking study.
And yes, that is funded out of here as well.
And did I miss the line item description of that?
It's
part out of this parking fund and then part out of the
West Side
the transportation construction.
Construction fund. So it's split between those two.
And I think it's in, hold on 1 second.
27.6.
Yeah, so it's, let me find the page number for you. So the second page of the line item detail and the account number, it's the third line. Yeah, so I said 77, but I think I had 77 stuck in my head, but it's 70, so sorry about that. Third line down, the consultant, 70,000 in
15-16. Uh-huh, okay.
And that's ongoing now, or that will be taking?
That will be taking place over the summer. And that really will be an opportunity for council to really dive into parking. It definitely is an issue that generates a lot of interest. We have the results of that study. And as you know, we're starting to get stressed as the economy's improved. We've got some parking challenges, especially in and around City Hall in that area, spilling out into the residential neighborhoods. So we'll be looking for a lot of, I think,
significant changes or recommendations that will come from that study.
And so the last study we did was
2002, quite a while.
Thank you.
So you know, whether that translates into, you know, residential parking permit program or recommendations for another parking structure, it's important that we begin planning for some of those things, because there will be costs associated with it, some of which can be funded out of here or potential urban renewal district or other tools that will definitely need to come into play.
Part of the backstory was the old parking study, not only was a long time ago, when before a lot of the big buildings got constructed and our new parking facility got constructed, but the other piece of it was it got done in the shoulder season and sort of funky times of day. So it's just so.
We've got some major peaking in the tourism season. So I'm hearing from businesses downtown that even the parking structure is full. And so we have folks that are trying to go out to eat in the evenings in the summertime, and it's so, but then you'll have other times where it's completely available, so it's that peaking. You know,
the actuals versus the adjusted from last time seem to be off by about half on all of them. If you got any comment on, did anything weird happen that might have anything to do with the current budget?
It's a biennial budget.
Oh, there you go.
I've been there.
The two added together.
We have that yesterday. It's very common. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Got it. Thanks, Sharon.
Okay. So moving on to accessibility. The next tab. So the first financial summary that you have for is the accessibility program that's accounted for as a division of the general fund. So this is the kind of program administration. It's all of Karen Morris, and then a portion of Terry Shepherd that a lot of you may know that provides some additional support to accessibility. So that's the majority, that's everything that's funded out of this fund in the general fund, or program of the general fund. Their materials and services is $20,000 per year, and that includes some outreach. That's also where any of the expenses associated with meetings and that type of thing comes out of the program. If you flip two pages to the financial summary for the Accessibility Construction Fund, we talked a lot about most of this earlier with Victor's question during the public comment. But the revenues in this construction fund, there's really two main revenue sources. The franchise fees, that's the half of the water and sewer franchise fees that we started dedicating to this fund in the current biennium, the 13-15 biennium. And that pays for the barrier removal. It will pay for the new project manager that we've mentioned a couple of times, or the half of the project manager that will be funded out of accessibility, and then all of the construction projects. The other revenue source is the general fund subsidy. So the general fund is paying for the debt that we issued back in 2010. And the general fund's paying for the debt service and then the internal overhead transfers.
How much longer on that? How much longer?
It will be paid off in December of 2024, but we have the option to refinance in December of 2017. And the interest rate is 2.62. So the barrier removals, that's the majority of the expenses in materials and services. You can see materials and services for the biennium are $150,960, and $148,000 of that is barrier removals. And as I mentioned earlier, we have the almost $900,000 in reserves that we were holding off on programming into the budget until we have that new project manager on board. Yeah, James?
The franchise fees, those are... Maybe I missed it.
It's the water and sewer.
Okay.
So just the water and sewer franchise fees.
Is that the other franchise fees go directly into the general fund, correct?
And then garbage.
Some go into
garbage goes to streets.
Street operations.
Street operations.
But
and,
we went over that last time.
Yeah.
The ones we had in the chart.
And some go to and the other half go into transportation construction for water and sewer.
Okay.
The whole 3% used to go into transportation.
Mm-hmm. And we split, now we
and
split.
And then we split it. So half go to accessibility. We try to do corridor approaches when we can, so that we're doing curb ramps and sidewalks. Karen has been working increasingly with transportation to try to get us the most bang for the buck as you can. When and she works with COVAC and COCA and transportation to look at corridors. And do I think the mayor has brought this up more than once, that it makes sense to connect a whole block, not just do a curb ramp without a connecting sidewalk. So that's been the approach we've been trying to take, even though the money's down the two different funds.
Sharon, can you speak about, so the contingency funds,
mm-hmm.
what's the over the guiding principle, you know, to have a contingency fund of $900,000 on a budget that's $3 million a year seems like a lot. You know, that seems like a lot of, you know, is it consistent throughout the city? You know, just how do you figure out how much should we have in this?
Okay, that's a good question. So our fiscal policies, there's kind of different target levels of reserves for the various funds. The general fund, our policy is 20% of annual expenses. And our development funds, so building planning, private development engineering, our minimum is 6, but the target is kind of between 6 and 18 months. The reason development
percent
months of operating expenses.
Oh, gotcha.
So for example, okay. Yeah, sorry. So if you had a $10 million annual budget, your 12 months to have 12 months of reserves would be another $10 million in reserves. Mm-hmm. The reason it's higher for the development funds is because if someone comes in today and says, I'm going to build this huge commercial property, they pay their fees. We still have a year's worth of work to do in terms of progress inspections as they go through construction until they get a final inspection and certificate of occupancy. So the development funds have longer reserve thresholds, which we'll talk about when we get to CDD later on tonight. The utilities, water, sewer, stormwater, they have 3 months, or 25% is the policy level for those funds. And then our fiscal policies, everything else is written, it's like 2 months or amount sufficient to be financially stable or financially responsible. Recognizing that, for example, all of our admin services funds, we try to keep those reserves pretty low because it's primarily personnel expenses. That's 70% of the expenses in admin finance fund are personnel. So we don't have a lot of volatility and fluctuations. Whereas if you were the street operations fund, we try to keep that 2 months of operating in that fund because they could have a big snow year, they could have some other larger unanticipated expenditures, and they have more. They could have more volatility in their revenues as well.
But specifically for
that's kind of overall.
That's overall.
For this one, it's
thank you.
It's
overall because I did want to know that. Thank
okay.
You. Yeah. And so on this one specifically,
so on this,
it still seems kind of high.
Yeah, and that's only because
yeah, okay.
We don't have that project manager on board. We could have taken that down to 200,000 and put that extra 700 in construction kind of as a placeholder, but we didn't want to put that placeholder until we kind of had a thoughtful strategic plan of how to.
So it's not going, just because it's
so
there, it stays there.
It stays here.
It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It'll stay accessible. It's just how it gets programmed.
And so in this particular budget at this time, it's higher than it might be because of anticipated mm-hmm. needs, but you're not exactly sure where
yeah.
those needs will be. So it's there, maybe it'll go to people, maybe it'll go to sidewalks, but somehow or another it'll be spent on accessibility.
It won't go to people, it'll go to projects.
Oh, okay.
It'll
okay.
all go to projects.
And it's just
it's
part of the
it's for capital.
But it would...
It'll help pay for the project manager
yeah.
that'll manage the project.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not an administrative kind of thing. It's
yeah.
About,
yeah. Thank you. And so with the construction fund, you would want to have, you want to have some money in reserves because we're doing projects and you're going to have, you know, class five estimates.
Oh, I understand that. That you're trying, just like all of us in our household budget, you want to have however many months of income in your savings account.
Exactly.
Something happens. Got it. Thank you.
Sue.
Go ahead.
You said the general fund subsidy went to pay off that debt. Right. So you have 821 for the general fund subsidy, 617 for debt service. That will split.
So it's the debt and also transfers. So the transfers for overhead, for admin, finance, the transfers also include some of the self-performed work that Streets does, the street operations crews.
I was just going to follow up on Barb's question, which is, so right now we have some significant amounts of money then in the contingencies. Mm-hmm. As everything gets worked out as you described it, does that come back to council?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Any moving of money around, you would have that.
So we'll see that. Mm-hmm. See that plan.
Yes.
Yes, and what I was just going to add is that I think it's important that if you ask, you shall receive. And we haven't heard a lot of public comment per se, but we have Michael here, we have Carolyn here. As a representative to COCA on council, I've been to a number of COCA meetings, and one thing that I've learned is that burial removal is critical for quality of life. We all have circulations that we migrate through, if you will, within our community. And for example, I spend a lot of time going between my home near Drake Park and City Hall, you know, and that's just sort of the circulation that's a part of my lifestyle. And these specific barrier removal requests are the result of circulations of people with disabilities. And I think what they're asking for this evening, and as a result of being here and giving testimony, is that this council have more of a commitment towards that burial removal request and for specific line item budgeting that is in excess of the 148 that we currently see in this budget. And so I'm going to be advocating that this council increase the funding for this burial removal because I think it, as I said, directly hinges on quality of life for people with disabilities.
And I'd also point out that last night during our preliminary sharing of ideas, what we are focusing on, that eight of us talked about transit and transportation, and this is part of transit and transportation. And one or two people talked about livability and citizen input, and that was citizen input, and this is all about livability, and it's complete streets, and it's spending our resources on as many people as possible at the same time.
So that'll be something that I'll bring forward come Thursday. I'm just giving everybody a heads up.
One thing I would say is that the one issue that we've had at the city is I've now managed two accessibility managers who have ended up being project managers, and that has not been the best way to actually get work done because we've had an engineering department that has had other really big projects, and so we've had to go outside to have outside engineers do a lot of our design. Besides what Streets does as part of their street overlays, they do very well with their projects, but to have the scale of what we need done by our accessibility manager managing outside engineers has not been the best way we've realized to keep the number moving forward for a city of 80,000 with as many curb ramps and sidewalks as we'd like to get done, no matter how much money we have. So I guess we keep emphasizing we need to get a PM, and that's what we're doing. So we can have all the projects in the world. I mean, Karen is now doing the Summit project. She's got priorities, but we have to have an engineer to oversee what we do. And that's the biggest funding piece that we need right now, so that that person can work with our accessibility manager on the priorities that we have to get those done in our relatively short season. I mean, our season doesn't go the whole year, so that's what is in the budget, and that's what we need this year, is the PM. And that $900,000 is there, but we will be struggling to get that spent this year. I mean, right now, Nick can tell you, we've got emails that have got the process for hiring the PM that is underway as we're sitting here. By the time we get them on board for this next season, I mean, you can speak to when you think that will actually happen so that we can get projects done.
Yeah, the process of hiring engineers right now is pretty, it's a lot of demand for engineers, but we hope to get a good one. So it takes about 3 months. Working with Karen Morris and on the accessibility program, there are a number of corridors laid out where we have very requests. She has all those. What we need now is a project manager to say, okay, take this now and move it into design and construction. So I've worked with Karen, and some of the transportation construction stuff was about $2.1 million of sidewalk projects in there that we also, this person would work on also, and these are also accessibility priorities.
Well, what it is that you're speaking to, Nick and Mary, is that potentially what we have is a personnel shortfall. And if that's the case, then we need to be, from a budgetary standpoint, addressing the issue from that. And the line item need not necessarily be in the form of accessibility construction per se, but it would be in personnel. And so if that's the case, then we...
And that already is in there. So the budget already reflects the personnel.
Yeah, that's the $148,000 that we're speaking of.
No, the $148,000 was the barrier, is what's in barrier removal. And I don't think anybody's, we're not in conflict here, I think we're all in sync here that what you're hearing from members of the accessibility community is they'd like to see that contingency program for barrier removals. That's very well possible. Mm-hmm. We just are saying, let's get the project manager on board and let's make sure it's orderly and it all kind of fits, and then we've got the projects lined up, we're doing corridors and there's efficiency, and I think that's what folks from the accessibility community, so I don't think we're not in, there's
no, I don't think that there's any conflict, but what I'm saying is that if we are in the budgetary process and trying to decide how best to allocate funds, that now that I'm looking at the personnel services, the $68,000 rough dollars per year for one particular FTE, a future engineer that we're going to hire, may not in fact be enough.
That's half.
The other half will come from the transportation construction fund, because they're also going to be doing...
Okay, we'll call it 135.
Or
1.5. I mean, if that's the discussion that we're having, potentially maybe there's somebody else in another department through an interagency transfer that needs to... that those funds need to be reflected here.
I would like to at least get the one person on and then have them assess, and it could be that maybe that is the solution, but I don't know quite yet what the workload would be.
Yeah, we
want to
get somebody
get two people right
away. Knows this area. We have yet to have an engineer at the city that really knows accessibility, and mm-hmm. Karen thinks that she has possibly contacts in the field that we can get somebody that this is what they want to do and they're good at doing. So just that alone would be awesome for us to have. And yeah, if council wants to give the accessibility construction fund more money or give the $900,000 right away, I would love to send that email to Karen.
Well, I'm not advocating that, but what I am advocating is responsible spending. And if there's a juggernaut and there's a deficiency that we're through this discussion identifying as not necessarily being funding for specific burial removal, but rather for personnel that is capable and inspired to solve this type of problem, then that's what we need to spend the money for. And if it's not just one person, maybe it's 1.5.
I mean, it's the right balance, because I want to spend money on projects on the ground that help people mm-hmm. and try to minimize. I mean, we always are trying to minimize overhead costs. So again, I think it could be that we expand it, but let's start off with see what kind of workload we can handle with the one person bringing on, and then we might come back to you with
a plan.
I'll be looking forward to that budgetary adjustment in the future then, I guess is what you're trying to tell
me. I think that'd be best to put a plan in place that really addresses, I think, advocates' needs of barrier, you know, really putting a high priority on barrier removal requests, trying to do it efficiently through corridors. I think that's all, you know, we haven't programmed it yet. So we didn't bump it up from contingency into a specific line item because there wasn't that certainty yet. So, but we'll come back to you and you'll have an opportunity to weigh in on how
other counselors, are you satisfied with that? Or
the two big sidewalk projects that are underway right now, you know, neither of those is addressing any written burial removal request. I think they're both, especially that Third Street project is, you know, I have no question whatsoever that it's a good project and we really need that. The Summit one, I'm not sure how that one got, you know, on prior choice. So I have questions as far as, you know, how is this being decided and who's overseeing? And yeah, if it's a personnel question of, you know, somebody with that expertise to be able to, you know, as you said, make our money go as far as possible. Because I completely agree, it makes no sense to do these little we're trying to avoid doing little isolated, disconnected pieces. We're trying to create corridors. But I have those, you know, I have concerns about how that process has been going forward up till now, and how we can do better with our money and make sure that our money is being spent as fast as possible. I'm looking at that $900,000 going, build us some sidewalks right now, you know, tomorrow. The construction season's here.
So it sounds like the bottleneck is really personnel, mm-hmm. not engineering, well, not funding.
How long have we had those barrier removal requests?
Was it last September?
September.
Was it September? Mm-hmm. So, I'm looking at, we went from $500,000 in 13-14 to 1.3 in 14-15. Our proposed is 1.9. This includes a contingency of 651. So in the 15-16, so that's starting July 1st this year, and we're looking at a mill then of 250 of that approximately is in the 16-17. Sounds like we've hired a project manager. I'm in that interview panel on Friday, so.
Well, that's a different project manager.
That's a different one, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess. More largely, though, the personnel is the choke point here. That's the limiting factor
for the barrier removal construction.
Yeah. Is there any way to leverage engineers that exist in the county or that might be doing this sort of work elsewhere? Or is that just too far out of the City of Bend kind of knowledge base that would not work? Is there any way we can not wait longer?
Yeah, I think on that type of, partnerships with the county or with other agencies, I think that it makes more sense to go after a project manager that we can bring inside and for one thing, Karen can introduce them to the ADA program, and then we can introduce them to the transportation program. And then there's also the street maintenance folks, so we really want them embedded into the city because they can also help street maintenance on their programs. And so as we bring this person in, this is really what, from a program standpoint, I prioritized five corridor projects with our accessibility committee in the city last year with Karen and that group. And then Karen's got these ADA barrier removal requests. So for instance, Wells Anchors Road is one of those corridors that we've identified. I've sat down with her. She has all the curb ramps marked out. What we lack is a design engineer, somebody to go out and we hire a firm to design with them, that project manager works with that firm, assesses what the drainage is, what the slopes are, what the corridors, how much we can get in this. And then after that, they go over to street maintenance and say, can you guys build this or should we contract it out? So having that person really inside, that's what we're really lacking right now. We've got really good process of the priorities and we've laid out all these maps that we really lack. We've got the money and the budget.
We were gonna bring all of those to you, the priorities about a month ago, remember Karen was at a work session and that was one we were running late, so she never did. We could come back with it. The curb ramps are all prioritized. The site, and I think the sidewalks are now pretty close. We were going to bring you, Barb, what you're asking for. That was one of those work sessions that got cut short.
Yeah.
Right.
So we were ready to do it. We just didn't.
So why don't we come back and do that, I think that'd be helpful for.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
To Sharon, I guess. Does all 900,000 of that, does that contingency fund have to be 900,000? Is that related to the, I mean, can't that be lowered and you can still get a project manager and still get, and have some of that money put into barrier removal requests and still get a project manager and still move forward?
Yes. So I think what everybody's saying, if I can
disseminate,
paraphrase, yeah. We don't have the staffing resources right now to, we could
arbitrarily just move.
Yeah, we could move a dollar amount.
That's what I'm
But we don't have anyone to actually manage it. Yeah.
So that the plan is after you hire somebody, you decide
how do you use the money?
If
how
you need more money for construction, that can be taken from the contingency.
You're going to be doing some work, whether you get a project manager or not.
That money is
and barrier removal is going to take place.
Mm-hmm. And we've got the 148, so they could start working on the 148,000 without any additional council action.
I'd hate to see 148 be used, and then the project manager hasn't been hired, so then the work stops.
Just to speak for Karen a little, I know she has some other, her concern is there's the barrier removal requests, the ones that were submitted in September that we prioritized. And then there's the 148,000. She gets specific barrier removal requests, like Nancy has one on a particular street where somebody's trying to have access to a program that she wants. She wants to have money to be able to respond very quickly to ones that come in versus the ones that are these corridor approaches that we need a project manager. So she's reluctant to use her funds and to have nothing available to respond to somebody that says, I can't get to my job that I'm trying to get to. That's her concern, whereas the 900,000 is what she was more targeting towards these barrier removal requests. We also have the franchise fee money that is we're not talking about, that we're trying to use for our transition plan curb ramps that have also been prioritized with the community. So I'm not sure how great a use this is of the budget committee's time to all of these various, what we're doing now is the question is, do we need more money from this process? And I think I'm hearing there is some openness from council when we come back to you with both the curb ramp and the sidewalk burial removal requests, when we have a project manager and we really know what the corridor approach is going to cost. Clearly the 900,000 sounds like it's on the table for a supplemental transfer. There may be some openness to more, at least I'm hearing from Doug, there may be some openness to more money being available when we come back to you with a presentation on what would that cost. I think it's more than 900,000 is from what Karen's told me for sidewalks and curb ramps. But we need a PM to help us with the engineering, as Nick was just talking about, to see what we can do in-house and what we have to go outside, because it's a lot less expensive when we can do it with our streets folks.
So what do we need to do? Do we need to do something to move that process along to hiring a PM, I guess is the question.
No, yes. I'm sorry that the engineering people aren't here tonight, because honestly, they think I'm a pain in the rear because I push them so hard on this topic. They have not been completely happy with me because I've really
Russ is here.
Them.
He can speak for himself.
Being the messenger. John knows. John actually knows. So we'll just, we're moving the process.
We're ready to advertise.
You don't need us to approve or anything,
We need to approve the budget as it's written.
It's in the budget.
Thank you.
And there'll be, sounds like there's going to be further discussion down the road with council about any expansions. And so we're going to move along.
How to use the contingency that will come back to
town when.
And I think we heard the preferences to focus it on barrier removals.
So we had, we pretty much talked through everything we had of these slides.
It was Karen did these slides,
so we've already pretty much talked about all of this. This is, but I like the slide. I will speak for Karen because this one graphic shows everything that she does as one person. This is just the interaction that she has in that. This is the kind of administration of the program that's funded in the general fund. So this just illustrates all of her coordination with internal City of Bend customers and departments, as well as outside accessibility groups. You look at this and you wonder how one person gets everything done. And then this just shows the coordination between the on the construction fund with the various departments and projects. And then this summary, this shows a summary of accessibility spending throughout the budget. So for last biennium and then proposed. So the accessibility program, the construction fund, which are the two we just talked about, the transportation construction. So those are sidewalks. There's a sidewalk project on the CIP that makes up the majority of this 450 and million 70 for the transportation construction. So that's a sidewalk project, as well as about 100,000 per year of self-performed sidewalk work that the street operations crews do. And then the street operations fund, this last line item, that's sidewalks and curb ramps that streets is doing in conjunction with overlay. So above and beyond any self-performed work that they do that accessibility construction and transportation construction is paying for. So that's all we had on accessibility.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, Michael. And Carol. And Jordan.
The next couple of funds will go pretty quickly. We don't have any separate presentations. But moving through the blue tabs in the binder, the cemetery. So we have two different funds for the cemetery program. The first is the operating fund. The primary revenues in this fund are burial fees and lot sales. So people that are buying their lot in advance of needing it. And we also have a new fee. You can see the headstones and liners. That's a new service that they want to provide. Right now, we don't sell headstones and liners out at the cemetery, so people have to go somewhere else and buy their headstone and then bring it back, and it's kind of inefficient for the customer. So you'll see an increase, there's an increase in the materials and services to offset that. The general fund subsidy, that's in place because the operating revenues are not enough to cover the annual operating costs. So there is about a $55,000 per year subsidy from the general fund. And then the cemetery trust earnings, when we will flip back to the permanent maintenance fund. But when customers buy their lot, there's also a separate fee for the permanent maintenance because they're only coming in and buying a burial plot once. But we have an ongoing obligation to care for the cemetery and care for that area. So there's a permanent maintenance, that's called the permanent maintenance fee. So that goes into a separate permanent maintenance fund, and the interest earnings on that money is transferred back to cover operations. So on the expenditure side, they have 0.6 of an FTE. David Abbas kind of mentioned this last night, that they have a streets employee that about two-thirds of her time is dedicated to the cemetery. And then she also has some free time that she's able to help out in street operations. So she's funded out of those two programs. Materials and services, that's primarily temporary help for some seasonal work, primarily for landscaping, and then also the purchase of those headstones and liners that they want to turn around and sell to the public. So very quickly, high level, that's the cemetery operations fund. And then the permanent maintenance fund is the only activity in that is really earning interest and then returning interest earnings back to the operations.
And that's a requirement of vice
state. We're a endowment cemetery.
Can I copycat Casey's question? Does the city need to have a cemetery?
Well, we've had this conversation.
We tried.
Do you know of any takers? Yeah.
No buyers.
Not undertakers, but takers.
We looked at increasing fees to be more consistent with other communities, and I can't remember what happened to that.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I had that in my notes to point out. Just started very early in the process of doing a fee comparison, and that's in conjunction with a supervisor in finance working with a supervisor in streets, our billing and customer service supervisor that oversees the cemetery revenue collections. She's also the supervisor that oversees utility billing, so she's a little busy right now gearing up for all of the rate structure changes going into effect July 1. So she started some initial research. And then once things kind of settle down on the utility side, once all the rate structure changes go into effect, then she'll have time to dedicate a little more of her time to that project.
And can just so briefly, but how are we selling headstone? You know, I just don't understand how the city would get involved in that.
I wish they were here tonight.
That's a carver. You know what I'm saying?
No,
I don't have to be make light of a series of it, but.
I'm not an expert on headstone carving. I don't know if they do that in house or I'm not sure of the process.
I mean, yeah.
But I know right now the customers have to go to a couple of different places to.
The liner, I can see where liner would be in-house as a chunk of concrete. You know, it seems like stones. I thought stones always came from, I don't know. I haven't had anybody. I haven't had to bury anybody yet.
And it may be us doing the coordination piece of allowing them to pay for it. Although they are keeping some inventory, so. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
We can. We'll get back to you tomorrow. We'll check with David Abbas tomorrow.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. SDCs. The next tab. This fund is pretty straightforward as well. The system development charge fund, as I mentioned last night, we have a separate fund where all of the transportation revenues are received. That's water, sewer, and transportation. So this fund basically collects all the revenue and then transfers it out to the project funds. So as a reminder, the revenue assumptions, we've assumed a 2.5% increase in the rates, which is the ENR, engineering news record, which is that kind of cost of living adjustment for construction costs. And then we worked closely with CDD, Community Development, with Jesse Thomas, their data analyst, in determining the development activity projections. So we're projecting a 5% increase in activity in 15-16 and then a 9% increase in 16-17. And Jesse did a pretty detailed analysis, which gives consideration to interest rates, land availability, population growth, and then kind of compares his analysis and findings to other economic forecasts. And as I mentioned last night, but just as a reminder, on the sewer revenue projections, we just use those same 2.5% ENR and same activity projections for sewer under the existing SDC rates because the sewer methodology was not complete. And actually, that reminds me, in response to James's question last, James had a question last night on population. So since I said Jesse's analysis takes into account population growth, last night James asked for 5 to 10 year population trends. So we went, I just went back to 2010, since that's when the PSU numbers were adjusted for the census. So I have those numbers, and then I also talked to Damian Cernick today and just dropped in a couple of notes on the most recent forecast numbers he has from Portland State that he's been using with the UGB. So PSU's 2015 population forecast for the Bend UGB is a little over 85,000, and PSU's projecting 2.2% annual increase from 2015 to 2020. So a little bit higher than our 2% per year.
I am sort of more general, and I bet you have a specific question. So can you just explain the rationale for the BNR thing? Explain what that is again. Is this a simple cost structure?
Yeah, there's Nick is around here somewhere.
It's basically looking at the cost of construction. Mm-hmm. And what's the projected increases over time. So as Sharon said, it's cost of, it's like similar to the cost of living index, but it's directly related to material cost, labor cost, and where they see those projections for concrete and asphalt and pipe, looking at, you know, what raw materials are and labor costs are around the country, and they come up with an average.
And we use the 20 city average, and that was set by Council adopted a resolution, this is 2015, maybe 2 years ago, maybe 2013, establishing the 20 city ENR as our basis for water and sewer, because the three methodologies weren't consistent, so we wanted to have one consistent increase in all of our SDCs.
And the SDCs are purely based on construction costs for improvements, and that's the correlation why we use that.
It just seems like the budget for 13-15 was $17 million, and then the proposed is going up to 30, almost doubling.
Oh, that you're including contingency. So James can probably speak to this better than I can. On water and sewer, all of their the projects and their CIPs for 15-16 and 16-17 were able to use all of the SDC revenues. On the transportation side, they don't have, explain it better than
transportation construction. So I guess the SDCs, they come into this fund and they have two flavors, reimbursement and improvement. Transportation construction has no problem spending reimbursement monies because the projects that they're doing. It's the improvement fees that they have trouble spending. So they just sit here until we've earned them in those funds before we make the transfer over.
And it's just the way those projects are getting prioritized.
But yes. It just seems like if you have that much kind of sitting there and your budget goes up to $30 million, are these ENR increases required? I mean, would everything collapse, for example, if you didn't have the 2.5% added?
So if you look, if you forget the contingency and kind of look at the transfers to transportation construction, so the 13-15 budget was $6.3 million, mm-hmm. and with the 2.5% ENR and increases in activity, we're projecting $7.3 million, so about $1 million more from 13-15 to 15-17. Same thing on water, going from 5 to 6.5, and then sewer 5.3 to 6.8. Mm. So still an increase, but not, it's not 17 to 30.
And I think
30 million includes
when we pass the, I think the ENR is built into, it's assumed that we've never not done the ENR.
Correct. Yeah, all of the methodologies.
All assume that you stay track, you keep on pace.
Include the ENR.
But all you're doing here is projecting how much money you have in mm-hmm. this fund when it actually comes time to build something, then the construction costs whatever it costs and pay it out of the fund. So it really doesn't affect anything in the real world, with all due respect to the accounting profession. It's about projecting the budget with some rational basis.
Yeah.
And then if something actually happens on the ground, then it's the real numbers.
Yeah, but when we determine the SDC methodology, the project costs that we throw in there are based off of the cost at that time. So for projecting out 5 years,
that's... You would kind of miss the mark, because the idea of keeping up with the ENR is that you're using this money to actually build projects. Building those projects gets more and more expensive each year because of the material cost and things that Russ mentioned, so you want to keep... The idea with the ENR is that you keep pace with that.
It's the rat.
And it's also used to pay for debt service. So to Jim's comment, during the recession, we weren't even collecting enough transportation SDCs to cover the annual debt service because development activity just came to a screeching halt. So it's projects and debt service.
And so ultimately, what do you expect if this continues in what you expect?
That contingency money all happens to be dedicated to transportation. So if Nick, in developing his five-year CIP, if he had more projects with eligible improvement SDCs, then basically we've got $8.9 million available for transportation projects. But it's not just carte blanche to spend on
I'm guessing that the GO bonds kind of took up a lot of the bandwidth of the city to do construction projects, mm-hmm. and so the resources went into the GO bond projects, and the kind of SDC related projects were a little bit on the back burner because there was no construction activity anyway.
One of the things that we have in the budget, it was mentioned briefly yesterday.
Nick still here?
Is we have a transportation funding sort of a strategy that we want to look at and take a look at our SDC revenue and other sources. You know, part of that work is happening on the regional level with Trip 97 is how do we prioritize some of these. You know, like missing links, like Murphy Road, Empire Extension, those really are, a big portion of those are growth related. You know, as the city grows, we really need those projects to occur, so we're gonna develop a strategy. It's a little different than the maintenance side, as we've been focused on that. You know, just, and as you all have seen, you know, being on the 5 cent gas tax buys you $2.5 million a year, that doesn't really get you a whole lot in terms of just maintaining the roads that we already have. There's still this other problem of connecting Bend up and really building out the grid. And some of that can occur through funding of that can occur through transportation SDCs. And there's some resources there, but as Sharon said, a lot of that's already, there's a lot that gets skimmed off the top to pay for that net service. So what projects we have and how we want to prioritize and how do we match that with some other funds and get some of that work. That'll be something that will be programmed dollars to help us figure a strategy out over the next budget.
There's $200,000 for transportation strategy in the first year of the planning.
When the transportation SDC fund was not sufficient to pay the debt service, where did the money come from?
The franchise fees. But it was bare, if I...
So transportation construction.
I'll look it up, but I think it was super close.
Just remember that. So there, you almost need a visual. That transportation construction fund, which then is used to fund the CIP. There's two primary funding sources that go into it. One is the SDCs, and then the other is the franchise fees. So that fund is bigger than just the SDC.
Casey. If we make an affordable housing exemption on some SDCs, will that play a role in these numbers in particular?
We're going to come back to you on, they will, and we're going to come back to you on the 20th next week with some you know, impacts of SDC exemptions.
Cool.
Loan repayment, how many more, same question as before, you know, how many more years on this loan? What's
oh.
Whatever loans that might And then, Sharon, can you tell me, so this one says loan repayment. The last one we looked at said debt service. What's the difference between debt service and loan repayment?
Oh. On the revenues. So we have SDC loan programs. So developers, people building homes, they can come in and we loan the money to them.
Oh, this is money coming to
us? So the loan repayment's at the top. That's money coming in.
Okay, I understand. So when we're paying it, we call it debt service.
Correct.
When we get it, it's loan repayment. Got it. Thank
yes.
you.
Chair? Yes, one last question. Clarification on the debt. I thought that when we were shopping for bonds, that the lenders weren't too keen on using SDCs because of the volatility. Is there a distinction there in types of debt that SDCs go to pay?
When we issue debt, when we will say what the repayment source is, and we'll list various, system development charges, we'll list various sources. And the transportation debt would be issued backed by the city's full faith and credit.
Okay.
So basically, if there were not other available revenues, then the general fund would be on the hook.
Okay.
But I went and looked. So on page 47 of the financial section, we have the 10-year trends of system development charge revenues. And there was one year in 2009-10 where we only collected about a little over $1 million of transportation SDCs, and the debt service is about 1.3. So there was one year in there that we didn't collect enough.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Anything else on SDCs? Okay.
LID.
Last fund before we take a break. The LID, or so Local Improvement District, we don't have any active LIDs right now. So this fund has about 600,000 of reserves that's accumulated from prior years, lien check revenues, interest earnings that have accumulated over time. And that money is available. So that 600,000 that's available to help offset future LID costs. So right now, all of that money is sitting in reserves. We don't have anything budgeted to program for that
right now. I think it's something, as you, for those of you that were actively involved in the Sewer Infrastructure Advisory Group, part of that strategy was to begin start setting money aside to help facilitate folks connecting the sewer system, especially in Southeast Bend, where we have a significant portion of folks on septic. And a tool to do that will be LIDs. So I think it's envisioned that the city would help facilitate that by putting in some infrastructure, but there's still going to be responsibilities that will be borne by the residents there. And so we have some funds when that program becomes more defined on how we can help sort of coordinate that effort. But we're still a few years away. We've got these immediate sewer projects on the north end, on the west side, the southeast interceptor. And so as you remember from that rate model, we don't really start building up that reserve for that local improvement for a few years out. I can't remember, I think it might be 2 or 3 years out on that rate model that we start setting aside money.
So would police be ready to go if we took our break now and came back in 10?
Yep.
So, or 15 minutes. So we'll take a 15-minute break, and then we'll come back for public safety.